This is episode 376 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, March the 19th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, in your backyard, and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Today on the show, there are rumours circulating that the owners of embattled telco Vodafone Australia are looking for buyers, which is not all that surprising considering their problems over the past few years. iiNet, Australia's second largest ISP, has removed its off-peak quota for some customers, creating an anytime quota, which is the accumulation of off-peak and peak. Apple's new operating system, Mountain Lion, or 10.8 Preview 2 for those counting, has hit the developer's website. Hackers release Norton antivirus source code, and IE10 looks a lot like Metro. Also today, Lena has the latest from the gaming world, and Adam takes a look at the new Freeview PVR with CRID data. Will it change the way we record TV? Probably not. First up, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Vodafone Australia is reportedly up for sale. Apple's new iPad hits Australian shores. PayPal launches a new card reader for mobile merchants. And the fledgling space tourism industry spreads its wings. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Owners of embattled telco Vodafone Australia are looking for buyers, according to a report in The Australian last week. Furthermore, a memorandum has allegedly been issued to potential buyers, such as telcos and investment houses in Asia and Europe. The news comes after Vodafone revealed in August last year that its total customer base had declined by 375,000 subscribers over the previous 6 months and declined by a further 200,000 in the second half of last year. Vodafone Australia was formed by the merger of Hutchison 3 with Vodafone several years ago and is now majority owned by the Hutchison One Power Group in Hong Kong and Vodafone in the United Kingdom. In a statement issued to tech news website Delimiter, a spokesman said, "Vodafone remains fully committed to our operations in Australia and our sole focus is on the turnaround of the business." The latest incarnation of Apple's iPad tablet computer has gone on sale in Australia, with Telstra and Big W opening stores at midnight on Friday morning last week. The new iPad features a higher resolution display than previous models, as well as a more powerful processor and compatibility with the latest 4G LTE phone networks in the United States. Early impressions have been favourable, with early adopters excited about the much-hyped 2048 by 1536 Retina display. Vodafone was first to announce iPad pricing plans. For the 16GB 4G version, Vodafone is offering $0 up front and $47 a month for 2GB of data a month over 2 years, the minimum 2-year contract cost being about $1,100. Telstra customers can buy the same model, also on a 2-year plan at $0 up front, with $68 a month for 8GB of data. Apple is now the most valuable company on Wall Street. Its shares passed $600 on iPad launch day, closing down slightly at just over $585 a share. The Sydney Morning Herald reports that Apple shares have gained more than 50% in the past 3 months and more than 70% in the last 12 months, trading at $252 on the 16th of March last year. eBay's online payment organisation, PayPal, has released a new card swipe device that works with all four major credit card networks. The PayPal Here mobile payment system is a triangular-shaped swipe device that plugs into the top of merchants' iPhones. A point-of-sale application lets mobile merchants create a bill, swipe a customer's card, and transfer cash from the customer's credit cards or PayPal accounts. Supported payment networks include Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover Financial Services, or DFS, in the United States. The device also encrypts account information, so credit card data isn't stored on phones, and the application creates electronic receipts that can then be emailed or sent as an SMS message to the customer. The PayPal Here device is only supported on Apple iPhones at this stage, but PayPal says an Android device and application will be made available very soon. And it seems hundreds of people are signing up for rides in privately owned passenger spacecraft. A number of privately owned companies are looking at flying not just space tourists, but experiments and payloads owned by research laboratories, businesses, and educational institutes. Organisations catering for the fledgling space tourism industry include Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic, PayPal founder Elon Musk's SpaceX, and even Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen's newly announced Strato launch. Virgin Galactic's Spaceship 2 is expected to make its first test flight this year and has already taken 500 flight reservations, which could begin as early as next year. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Graham and I are in this evening, so all will be good, won't it, Graham?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We're glad
to have you back.
Yes, yes.
No, you're
what
just
Lee
saying
said.
That.
Andrew has just revealed that he is very old.
Ooh, so, and it'll be fully 3D.
I can only assume that's irony.
It is irony, yes.
Ah, see? Why don't they have a LED encased cockpit as well?
You wouldn't be able to see out of it, Andrew.
We don't
told you that. I haven't got an antenna plugged in.
Like, it's smaller than your face.
Well, he's informed.
There it is.
I mean, it's hard enough to do it properly within one phone network.
What did you load it up on? Come on.
Adam will bring clarity.
Oh, okay. We'll see what he does.
Yes, I know it's not called the iPad 3. I look forward to your angry letters.
Pew, pew, pew. What not?
Oh.
Yeah.
I've got wood. I need sheep.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. Sitting across in front of me this evening, Graham Callaghan. Good evening, Graham.
Good evening, Andrew.
What have you got on your laptop there? You just tried to log into Apple and it said, go away, don't bother me.
It did, yes. It
what
said
happened?
Forbidden when I went to apple.com today.
What have you done to upset the Apple cart?
That's what I want to know. I thought
That's later, everybody. Sorry, it's a good start.
I thought they'd blocked my notebook just because I was planning to say something bad about them. But
oh, really? No? They got a big meeting tomorrow.
Have they?
Yeah. I don't know what it's about. Something about $100 billion worth of cash or something. Their cash flow or something.
I'll have some.
I don't think it'll be a problem for them, whatever it is, but nonetheless, I was reading that today. Lena, welcome. Good evening.
Thank you.
I can
good
put
day.
A bit more Axel F up for you if you want to dance a bit more in the
sure.
studio. That's always add to the
I always
occasion.
Like a bit of Axel Foley.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
Dr. Ron does. He likes playing quite a bit of it.
He likes
when
Foley
he's paneling.
In general, I think.
I just like to run it in for a bit, you know.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. It's good music. Yeah. Anyway, welcome everybody, wherever
you are.
We've
spoken over it now. We've spoiled it.
Oh, should be quiet for a minute.
Yeah, that's what Lena and I did.
Oh, okay.
We did. For a really long time.
dear. Well, welcome to your last show for a while, Dr. Ron.
Thank you. It is my last show for a while.
Heading north to the wetter climes very shortly.
Heading
on a
north,
bit of a vacation, as I say.
On a northern safari. It'll be a bit exciting.
Yeah.
I'll have to do a live cross for you or something.
That'd be good. Can you call in? Do they
I
have
can.
Mobile phone coverage where you're going?
I'm sure they have mobile phone coverage
you can
where
say,
I'm going.
Hello, you I'm should, on a train.
And I will be. I will be on a train. So that's clever.
You yeah. should relax, though. You shouldn't get cross on your holidays.
I shouldn't get cross?
No. You said you were going to be live cross.
Ah, live and cross. Graham the pun master.
Ooh. I didn't know we got punished for bad puns now.
But
sorry,
punished.
I just leaned on the mouse button.
But where I will be 90 minutes behind going to air. So that means if it's
so you're going,
8 p.m.
going
in
west.
Melbourne, I'm going west, yeah. I'll have to be on at 6.30 p.m. That's okay.
Yeah.
I should still be vertical at 6.30
p.m. You'll be a time lord.
I will.
You will.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, interesting show tonight. I think there's a few things to talk about.
When you say interesting, do you mean we have to speak really slowly?
No, or really?
Because
there's
we've got an hour and 50
much.
Minutes to fill and nothing happened this week.
No, that's not quite
that's
true.
Not
things
quite
happened this
right.
week.
Did they?
We've got things to talk about.
They certainly did, Ollie.
Oh, okay.
Are you guys going to fight again? You know, to take up the airtime?
Fight?
Oh, I don't think there's any fighting to be done here, is there?
They have.
I'll only fight with Andrew if he gets something wrong again.
So, yes.
It started. They have a frank exchange of views occasionally,
they
Lena.
They did.
Are you
it
familiar
was
with the Second World War? That was a frank
yes.
exchange of views.
That was a very frank yeah. exchange of views.
All I can say is this.
You're going to mock me. At least get your facts straight.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's my line.
Fighting words.
We'll leave him with it, Lena. Let's go out.
I'll go get the jelly.
Yeah.
What are you two going to do?
No. To put in here for
I'm
the fight.
I've got the little bathing pool in the back of my car. Yeah. Lena's got the jelly crystals.
Yep. Oh, never leave home without them.
This is why we can't YouTube the program.
It is, actually.
It's also why we can't have nice things.
This is why we can't have nice things.
We have a lot of requests, all one of them. Who was it the other day? We get the same request. Can you do a video for YouTube? No, we can't.
We tried that. It was a lot of work.
We
used to do a Ustream. Yeah. And I used to have to put makeup on every week, and I don't want to do that again.
Oh, is that what the difference is?
Yeah, I just look old now.
Oh, and wrinkly. Yeah. Yep. No, never that. No. I've completely lost my train of thought. But anyway, we'll come back. Oh, actually, I remember what I was going
to
do.
You have to get out of your pyjamas too. You have to put real clothes on.
Can't do that.
When was the last time you sent a letter in the mail? And stuck a stamp on. You know, Jen, why come up to you these days and say, which side of the envelope do I put the stamp on?
An RSVP to a wedding.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Warlock, that was paid for me. I didn't have to do anything.
Warlock, who let me tab back to the chat. I think he's in the chat.
Yeah, yes. Warlock's there.
Yeah.
He is.
He sent a Christmas card a couple of months back. We finally looked in the pigeonhole today and got it. Thank you, Warlock.
Much appreciated.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. See what happens with snow mail these days? Things just don't find their way where they need to be. But anyway, we appreciate the thoughts.
Come and join us in the chat room.
Email
if you're listening live, chats.techtalkradio.com.au is where we all are.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Lots of correspondence this week, Andrew. First of all, a cranky email.
Ooh.
From Cranky the Crane.
From Prime Meridian via the contact form. Prime Meridian, she says...
Says...
Another week and another Adam Turner reading of what he has written a few days earlier for Fairfax.
I don't mean your average latte-sipping, MacBook-wielding, metrosexual digital hipster.
There he is.
He looks forward to your angry letters. Every week, I can guess Adam's subject on Tech Talk Radio because I've read it days before in The Age/SMH.
Are you telling me that he's regurgitating?
I've seen him regurgitate, and it's not pleasant. Oh. This week, Adam was asking, would people cast aside their iPad 1 or 2 for the new model? There was yet another article and a video story on Age/SMH asking the same. Talk about obsessive. Whilst I'm sure there will be some would-be upgrading, surely it was more important to report for the majority of your audience, who I suspect don't own an iPad or another tablet, but now could be considering it. Oh, bullet points, Lena. It's a bullet point email.
I like those.
Oh, no.
Now, more.
Number one.
Is it a one sheet of paper or a two sheet of paper piece
of condensed
communication? Unlike your invoices.
Should your... I didn't fix it. Should your audience consider the new iPad based on the specs announced? And who cares what it's called? Most consumer products keep the same name year to year. It's called marketing.
Amen.
I know Graham's chomping at the bit to respond to that one. We'll let him in a moment. What are the Android tablet products like? Will they be able to compete with the Apple product in 2012? I'd like to see the Tech Talk team conduct...
Are we going to get a chance to answer any of these,
no.
Dr. Ron?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to see the Tech Talk team conduct an informed discussion on the state of the tablet market in Australia and tell us, the audience, what we think. Instead of telling the audience you don't own or use such hardware.
My netbook just blue screened. Oh, it's gone now.
Thanks. I enjoy your show each week on the podcast, hoping you can embrace the opportunity and stay relevant.
Ow!
Ooh,
straight to the burns unit from Prime Meridian.
Ow, Prime. I talk about my iPad quite often.
Yes, we know.
See? I think that might be what he has a problem with.
Graham, what do you have to say?
The fact that I'm Robinson Crusoe.
Would you like to address these bullet points, Graham?
Question one, how does he expect the panel to have an informed discussion? Question two.
Oh!
Ow!
I include myself in that.
I'm plenty informed.
Thank you. There was a question there about the quality of Android tablets and whether they can compete.
There's one in the studio tonight.
If there's one thing the panel knows, that the quality of Android tablets is extremely variable, and some of them can compete and some of them just can't.
I was going to say, Prime, we do get loan equipment from time to time, and Adam more so than the rest of us because in the capacity in which he works. We try to report as objectively as we can when we have the opportunity. I bought a Kogan Agora tablet late last year, and I reviewed it accordingly.
Got very poor reviews. In fact, it was almost useless
indeed.
Device.
So we, bouquets where they're due, but if they're not, then we'll can something.
Yep.
Now, just coincidentally, entirely coincidentally, Prime, Graham has a gadget of the week, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the program.
Oh, we're not going to talk about...
We can now, yeah, absolutely, if you want to.
Oh, well, no. Well, it's given that it's relevant.
Yes.
Yeah,
what are you holding there in your hands?
And we're trying to stay relevant.
Is that Minecraft?
No, well, but I don't know. Only if Lena's been on my brand new Lenovo ThinkPad.
I may have accidentally put
another
Minecraft
tablet
on there.
Running Linux, running Ubuntu, running what flavor have you got on it?
It's running Android 3.1.
Oh, very nice.
It is very nice. It's very fast. It's responsive. It does things. It's reliable. It doesn't crash all that often, like the Kogan one did.
The Kogan one. Yep.
Yeah, the battery life maybe. Could do with some work, but then again, I hear the iPads sometimes suffer from that, depending on what you're doing on them as well.
Yeah, it depends on what you're doing.
Yeah. Obviously, because this has been new, I've been on the wireless a lot. I've been playing YouTube videos a lot and all those sorts of things that chew up the battery.
Is it a phone one or is it a Wi-Fi only
one? No, this one's Wi-Fi only. It's the bottom of the range. It's the cheapest one that they do. It's a 16 gig model with no 3G, because I've already got a 3G card in my laptop and a 3G card in my phone. So I figure I've always got my phone with me. It may as well use wireless to go through my phone.
Yeah. Save yourself a couple hundred bucks.
Exactly. And,
I did the same
and
with my iPad.
$30 a month or whatever it is, yeah.
I did the same with my iPad.
Yeah,
use
it makes a lot of
hotspot.
Sense. Yeah. Mm. No, but I've configured this up. It'll VPN into my customers' sites. I can use Pocket Cloud, which is a paid app, but it's only a small cost, which allows me to RDP to all the servers that I need to maintain, and I can do all that from the ThinkPad. It's got some features that the iPad doesn't have. Lena commented it was a little bit on the thick side, mm-hmm. but it's not so thick that it's unusable or unwieldy.
Definitely not. It wasn't heavy.
It actually looks like it's going to stick to your lap rather than like the iPad, which tends to zip off because it's got its rounded edges.
Mm. Yeah, and yeah, it's not too bad. I haven't got the case for it yet. This Sony, I haven't even got any accessories for it.
Is it the same screen size? I'm trying to visualise it for the listeners.
Oh, that's a good question.
Of the iPad thing. Get your iPad out, Lena, and lay it on top of it.
I haven't got it with me today.
Oh,
no,
is that what you think
but,
of them?
I think it's a bit smaller, slightly smaller.
Is it?
Yeah, that could be. Yeah.
A little bit this less way. Real estate.
Yeah. A little bit less. But it could be the same. It could
still,
just be screen I'm looking at just deceiving me.
It all depends what you do with them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yep.
The one hours of charge does it have? We were talking about charge before.
Some, several. Something between some and several. I'm really, it's so new.
Scientific.
I haven't played with it that much.
Oh, fair enough.
The one thing it does come with that a lot of other tablets don't and the iPad doesn't is it comes with a little stylus, which is really good.
Mm.
So in, and it fits in, it's got a little hidey hole, it slides in.
Oh, that's
in.
Cute. It slides actually into the device itself, so you can't lose it.
So that's right.
Well, you have to try hard to lose it.
You have to try hard to lose it. And
it's got a big red button on the end, and I thought that was the on and off switch.
No, that's just the branding. No, it has a battery in it. It's an active pen, but what it does do is allow very accurate clicks.
Mm.
So particularly when you're using RDP to maintain servers, that sort of stuff. I mean, in my case, I want to use it as a business tool to do that sort of stuff. And trying to click on the tiny little X on a tablet size representation of your Windows desktop, it's quite hard to do, whereas with the pen you can do very accurate
clicks
and things. So I've found it to be a very good tool, and it does allow me to do things that much more easily than carrying the full laptop around. So yeah, definitely is going to have a place in the business arsenal.
Cool.
So and significantly better than the tablet that we're playing with Dr. Unstable.
How much was it, Graeme, if you don't mind me asking?
Good question, because...
Thanks. I'd like to know.
I didn't, yeah. I think...
Did you nick it? How come you don't know?
There's a story behind how I came by that.
Oh, you've been to the pub, have you?
Well, no, it was a promotional deal, and it's a good deal.
Yeah, good.
Sure. So because
you
of some other stuff...
Like,
no, because of a lot of business I've been doing with Lenovo. I don't...
Contra.
No, it was a special offer. I think that model is $599.
Oh, still, that's good value for money when you think about it.
So it's not cheap like your Kogan tablet was cheap.
That's right.
But you get what you pay for to some degree.
Mm.
It's probably what's the cheapest iPad? Is it comparable?
About $599,
isn't
it?
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I don't know. That was US dollars when I was there. I think they're $599. I don't know what the new ones are.
Yeah, I paid about $650, something like that.
Did you get phone thing in yours, or did you get Wi-Fi?
No, just Wi-Fi only. Yeah, because I've already got the wireless hotspot on my phone, so I might as well just run it through that 3G there.
Yeah, so the same logic as with mine. Mm. Yeah,
quite often a bit bemused why people buy the phone version. Obviously, there's reasoning behind it, and if you're using it all the time, and you're not carrying a phone or something like that. Well, why not? But otherwise, the telcos will just win. They get a contract off you, and I guess the benefit to you is you get a you're in the upgrade cycle, which I think Adam spoke of last week, where you know you use it for 2 years and you get a new one.
Mm.
Prime, we hope we've addressed some of your bullet points and keep the feedback coming, whether it's good or bad. We'll read it out. We'll have a bit of a discussion
on
air.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And if you'd like to send us anything to review, you're more than welcome.
Correct. And we'll have a look at it for you. Freak via the Tech Talk Radio forum says, hey, guys. Hi, Freak. After hearing you talk about the powering on and off of computers at the bank.
Oh, yeah.
I have a simple solution, which I use here at work. I've accessed the BIOS and have tweaked the settings, which allows my computer to wake from alarm so it powers on by itself as I get into work, and I have a schedule set to power itself off at the end of the day if I ever am away from work. It is simple to do, and I found this helpful to have my computer at home also. If I ever need to access it when I'm away, I can be confident in knowing it will be on during work hours and that it will power itself down at the end of the day. If companies are that serious about having access to their computers away from work, maybe they should consider doing this instead of leaving their computers on all the time. Just a thought. That's all. Cheers, Tristan. Freak.
Ooh.
We spoke about
interesting
this at
thought.
Some
yeah.
length last week, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yep.
We did.
And you can do things in between. Like you could have the computers wake on land so that if they're addressed over the network that they wake up. Things like that. But yeah, that's a good solution. I suppose you could have it wake up at some point in the middle of the night. You could schedule it to wake up at 2 a.m., do its updates, and shut down at 4 a.m. or something. So it's just awake for time to do some updates then, and then wake up again at 8 a.m. just before the people start arriving for work.
What about your updates
possible?
You were singing the virtues
no,
of the
updates
at 3
you,
in the morning.
Yeah, you wake it up at 2 o'clock to do the updates and put it back to sleep again at 3:30 or something.
What happens if it hasn't finished its updates in that period of time?
Well, yeah.
Does it give you grief? Or you have to try it.
I don't know. It would, yeah, if you send a graceful shutdown command, it would gracefully shut down and any unfinished updates would load next time, I presume. But, yeah, I think the amount of power that a computer uses when it's in low power mode, it's spun down the hard disk, it's turned off the screen.
It's pretty minimal, isn't
it's
it?
It's not using a huge amount of power.
Nah.
It might even have, turned down the CPU cycle, so it's not using so much power there either. You know, they can really bunker down. But, yeah, that's another solution and might be more suitable to the small office, home office type users rather than the corporate users. But, yeah.
Thanks, Tristan. Peter on the forum says, here's one for Lena.
Ooh,
that's
me.
Current or not?
Have you thought that the Windows 8 lock screen might be an intelligence test, as in you need to be this smart to go on the Windows 8 ride? Just kidding. Ouch, he says.
Lol, Peter, lol.
Lols.
It's not,
I taunt you from afar.
It's not about, yeah, send me a shrubbery. It's not about smart and dumb. It's about elegant UI that allows users to actually use the stuff. Or clunky, horrible, dumb, unintuitive UI.
Which it is.
Actually, yes. Says Peter, it suffers from being designed, in his opinion, for both touchscreen and non-touch hardware.
Yes, correct. Mm. Yes.
The swipe you describe doing with the mouse is the touchscreen action. For non-touch hardware, you can just hit any key on the keyboard. And now, if only it had detected the hardware and pop up an appropriate message, swipe to log on or hit any key. You can make it easier if you don't have multiple users and are okay with auto-logon.
No, I'm not.
This works the same way as in Windows 7 and before. That way you never see the lock screen at startup. Don't give up yet on Windows 8, says Peter. You need to spend some time with it to become comfortable and do some research on the web. Cheers, Peter.
No, I don't have to. Don't want to. Don't like change.
Yeah, some of us are going to have to, I'm afraid.
You can. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
I'll sit over here in Macland.
In Macland and pretend that all is rosy in your little walled gardens, protected from the real world.
It's going to be a blue in here tonight before the
protected from the unwashed masses.
The program's
I
over.
Protected from the real world.
Some whip cracking tonight.
Last but not least,
I'll get him in the car park. It's all right.
Oh, is that a euphemism?
It might be.
I'm worried now.
Cisco, via the contact form, says, hi, everyone. I just wanted to say hi and let you all know that I'm still alive and kicking over
hi,
here.
Cisco.
Hi, Cisco. He has disappeared.
Yes. He's in OK, isn't he?
Oklahoma.
I think so. Lena,
where the wind comes... I've done that before.
You've done that one before. Always good to hear from you. I wanted to let you know that my wife just purchased a gaming platform for the family.
Oh, good girl.
Which one?
I took a lot of the criteria you talked about on the show, and for us, we chose a PS2. And so far, it has been
PS2.
PS2. So he's obviously picked it up from somewhere, like on eBay or secondhand
good
or
move.
Something.
Lots of games out there for
and
us.
And cheap, it would be cheap as chips.
Cheap as chips.
And so far, it's been an ideal match for what we wanted. My six-year-old son is currently addicted to Lego Star Wars and plays it all the time.
See, that makes perfect sense with a very young kid. Yeah.
Doesn't matter if they break it because it was cheap.
Dr. Ron was playing Lego Star Wars during the week in the office.
I was bored. We hooked it up to the big screen on the Avid and...
Yeah.
Lego Star Wars?
Yeah. You did what?
Yeah. Sorry, did I say something I shouldn't
have? I didn't send that into the office. Did
no, you did not.
That was yours.
It might have been.
I'm proud. I'm busting with pride.
PlayStation 2 onto your big screen at the office.
Yes.
Through an Avid, which is a highly professional video editing suite.
Just bang the rocks together,
billions
maybe.
Billions of dollars of equipment, almost.
No comment.
Not quite.
Dr. Ron, always good to hear from you and good to hear your insights. Thanks, Cisco. Also, you need to fight more. That was expletive deleted awesome.
Ooh.
Who fought when?
Cisco. Well, just then. We did just then. Can he see into the future?
He can.
Wow.
He's at Cisco, the Time Lord. View from the couch is always good, and I must say it is surprisingly relevant for an American because it oftentimes helps remind me of how differently technology is approached outside of the United States. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Cisco.
Okay. In the same Coro block, we were called relevant and irrelevant in the same... Same one.
And Adam's been praised and canned.
Yes.
In the same one,
If nothing, we're balanced.
I think you're neutral now, Adam. I think you're good. I think you've got a minus one and a plus one, so you're back to
zero.
In the defence of Adam, yes, he does often talk on the show about things that he's written about during the week, but I think that's fine because I don't always have time to read his columns in the Age and so on, and I'm sure a lot of some of our listeners obviously will read his columns, perhaps many of them, but a lot don't. And, I think that, it gives us a chance to hear his thoughts if we're not regular Age tech readers or Sydney Morning Herald tech readers or whatever.
He's got another instalment tonight, so we'll look forward to that as well. If you'd like to communicate with the panel, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
It's, funny you should mention Cisco being far away because the iPad 3, when it came out during the course of the week...
The new iPad.
Good, that worked.
Troll.
Certain companies from the US, journalistic-related companies, sent people to Australia to buy the iPad because it came out here first, 12 hours beforehand. So they came over here and they got them and they pulled them
all
apart.
Because it's always yesterday in America.
Yeah. They haven't caught up yet, have they?
No, they never will.
Yeah. It's a bit like New Zealand. They're always a step ahead in front of us too, but nonetheless.
Not quite so far.
Yes. Yeah. So, anyway, that was good. Any iPad stories the course of the week, anybody that's heard anything new?
Well, I heard everyone raving about the display.
Lots of people got up early and stood in line. I didn't see or know any of them.
Not as many as in the past, though.
So it was a bit of an anticlimax.
No, I don't think it was an anticlimax. I think just a lot of the people who have been interested in iPads have already bought one by now.
Yeah, well, I've got my iPad 1. I had no interest in the iPad 3. Mm. There's nothing really...
The new iPad.
Sorry, I did it again, didn't I?
Yes.
Well, see, it's going to be known as that, isn't it?
No.
Oh.
You've been told, son.
I'll go now.
The problem is, when we've got the fourth and fifth generation, will we still have to call this one the new iPad?
How are we going to delineate between the two of them?
Yeah, we need to be able to differentiate between the
two. It's going to be a big
generation
problem.
iPad.
The third generation
okay,
iPad.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Star Trek now.
No. Please don't.
Okay.
I did hear stuff about Apple Store staff doing conga lines and things, trying to... Yeah, when they're religious fervour.
Oh, as you do.
At Apple.
Yeah. Why were you logged on to the Apple Store, out of curiosity, beforehand? Because we didn't quite get to the bottom of it. You logged in there to show something and it came back with a 503
error. Yeah,
what
I did was I went to apple.com.au and I clicked on the iPad ad and I went through looking at... This says it's got ultra-fast wireless. Learn more. So I go to learn more about that and I scroll down a bit. And I find that it's talking about the Retina display.
I would never have thought to type in Apple.com.
Here we go. Learn more about the iPad with Wi-Fi and 4G. I'm thinking, okay. And look, there's a big headline. It says iPad with Wi-Fi plus 4G. But look at the URL, apple.com/au/iPad/4G. So this is a page that's specifically tailored for Australian users.
Yeah.
It's got the AU in the path, so they know that it's Australian people looking at this. It's the Australian version of the promotional material. Uh-huh. And the headline... And the text repeatedly says Wi-Fi plus 4G. Okay, 4G as in LTE, as in super fast.
Fourth generation mobile phone communications.
Now, the iPad in Australia will never work on 4G networks because the 4G networks in Australia do not use the frequencies that are built in for 4G in the iPad. Now, a lot of people are saying that that is misleading promotion, misleading advertising.
Because well, it sort of is, really, isn't it?
It's being aimed at Australians, and it says 4G, which it does not do.
And people think
it is not compatible with
stuff?
Any 4G network in Australia.
Mm. Good point, Graham.
Okay. And the same thing goes for their promotions on, you know, say, apple.co.uk and in some of the European Apple sites where it won't work either. The only place where the iPad, the new iPad, the third generation iPad, whatever you want to call it, will do 4G connections is in the US, and even then it's only on and Canada, and it, even then it only works on if you've got the right network, if you're on a specific network. Or I think there's two specific networks it works on.
Verizon and someone else.
We've got LTE. Is it another 2100 or 1800 meg here in Australia? I can't remember exactly, but it's one of those. And obviously you need the appropriate equipment in your gadget to utilise that. Yep. So
now, from where you're sitting, Lena, can you read that there?
Yes.
iPad plus 4G, nice big letters. You can read it from halfway across the room.
Yep.
Can you read that there where it says plus 4G again?
Yes.
Okay.
It's now, an eye test now.
Yep. Now, have a look. Can you read that line there?
It's good for radio, isn't it?
4G LTE is supported only on AT&T and Verizon networks in the US and on Bell, Rogers and Telus networks in Canada.
You have superb eyesight
I've
to
got
be
my
able
glasses
to read
on.
That from there.
Data plans sold separately. Please see your carrier for details.
It is a tiny point size compared with the headlines. Yeah.
It is in a tiny font. It's in a much less dense font than the rest. It's quite it's grey on white instead of black on the white background. It's really hard to spot right down the bottom of the page below all the navigational aids and things, below the promotions to the app, to the shop online and so on. So, yeah, whereas the headline still says 4G and the text says 4G.
The only way that the device can be used in Australia in some way on a 4G LTE network is by tethering it through a third-party device.
Yeah, but it's not the device. You can't...
No, that's right. That's what I'm saying. You can't do it directly. If you're going to be using data on a 4G network, there must have another piece of hardware, a non-Apple piece
of hardware. In the chat, Trent says, in Australia it's 1800 meg for LTE or the fourth generation mobile communications. I think in the US it's 700 meg, as I think Warlock was saying, support 700 and 2100 meg frequencies. So, we miss again. So 1800 for LTE in Australia.
And so it's not just us. The Europeans miss out as well.
Yeah, well, that's life. At the end of the year, when they turn analog telly off in this country, there'll be a bit of spectrum in the 700 meg band. Maybe they'll buy it. Who knows? Someone will buy it. We might have it there eventually.
Emergency services, weren't they looking at it?
Yeah, who knows? Whoever's got the deepest pockets, really. It'll be auctioned.
Oh, then it won't be the emergency services then.
Very good. So there you go. There's a bit of an iPad update.
Yes. So Apple are copping some criticism over that.
Damo, the geek in the chat room, has said the ACCC is having a look at that issue.
Are they?
Yeah, this doesn't surprise me at all. They ought to be. It's exactly the sort of thing. Now, they've been criticised over it. They've modified the page. They've added the warning down the bottom that it only... But so that Apple are fully aware that this is a problem and an issue for people, but they still haven't changed the headline and haven't changed the text, although they've only just put a tiny little warning at the bottom.
Primal,
what have you found?
And Warlock are saying in the chat that Optus are looking at doing a 700 megahertz 4G trial. And Warlock said Optus will be rolling out 4G services in the 1800 megahertz band from April 2012 to Newcastle, Port Stephens, the Hunter Valley, Lake Macquarie areas. Optus 4G services will also be delivered to Sydney, Melbourne and Perth from mid-2012 with further expansion expected shortly after.
Very good.
Okay, well.
So maybe they know something we don't.
We'll find out. Mark will be on the show shortly. He'll be able to give some indications of what's going on.
If I had an iPad or a tablet, I would rarely, if
ever...
You do.
You've got a tablet.
You have a tablet.
Where's your Kogan thing?
No, that's not real.
Not a tablet. No.
I wouldn't...
It's a coaster.
It's a coaster now. And my toaster... It's a toaster coaster.
Toaster coaster.
Yeah. I would rarely go anywhere with that device if I... You know, without my mobile telephone.
No.
So if you've got the ability to tether through a smartphone, then, like we were saying earlier, save yourself some cash. Save yourself
$200 in Australia.
Use tethering and your data plan.
Don't sell your soul to a telco.
It depends on what you're doing. If I didn't have the notebook with the card built in, if I didn't have that and I decided not to carry a notebook and only to carry a tablet, I'd definitely go for the one with the 3G built in.
All right.
Really?
But, yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Because I use my phone to tether all that sort of stuff. I've got plenty of bandwidth there.
Yeah, but
there,
it's not quite as seamless. I mean, I could tether the laptop through the phone as well, but I choose not to. I've got a laptop with it built in, and it's nice. But I don't really want three devices with that.
Okay.
But I could survive too. And I think if I didn't have the laptop, I would have the tablet with the 3G built in.
It's just another data plan that you've got to pay for.
Well, that's right.
But you're paying for convenience, aren't you?
That's right, yeah. And I don't need that much convenience, because if I really need it, I've got two other options.
My father-in-law bought a new phone during the course of the week.
Ooh.
Bought a Motorola.
Yes.
But
bad luck.
My father-in-law... What?
Go on.
Motorola and a Nokia mobile phone.
Because he listens to this show.
Oh, I'm sure that's a good device. Okay, tell us more, Andrew.
Okay. Well, the thing that amazed me, the plan that he's on, it only has 200 meg of broadband with it.
The Motorola Razr, they lost me.
Yep.
From that point
terrible.
On.
Oh,
that was terrible.
I know. A lot of people don't think highly of Motorola. It's a bit like Nokia these days. They sort of lost the plot a little bit, but nonetheless. Yeah, no, I just, the mobile broadband, which I think everyone likes to use. But if you've got a mobile phone which only has 200 meg of broadband on it, then potentially a tablet, you could get the 3G version on it.
So he's got
all depends on your plan.
A data plan with 200 megabytes a month.
Yeah, that'd do me 2 days out there in the real world on my device.
Obviously,
two emails suits some people.
Yeah, two emails, exactly. Mm. No mapping.
It's a day of Twittering for you.
It is. Well, a morning.
A morning of
that's
Twittering.
My coffee.
200 megabytes of Twitters.
Now, let's talk a little bit about... Thank you, Graham.
Sorry, I just backed Lena's microphone stand with my tablet. That was really dumb.
Let's talk a bit about web browsers at the moment. The reason why I want to do that is because Firefox 11 snuck out under the radar during the course of the week. Everyone's going, who cares?
Yeah.
But nonetheless...
Does anyone still use Firefox?
No.
Well, we did a little test in the office. Dr. Ron's put his hand up.
Really?
I do. I found a really, really good plugin. I can only find it for Firefox.
I'm in the
and
same
it's a,
boat
it's
with
a
web
flash
testing.
Video collector, saver, downloader thing. You know what I mean?
So you can save videos off YouTube.
Exactly. YouTube or one of those sorts of sites. And it auto-detects and it just writes it out to a file and it just works and it's brilliant.
Chrome have those. Safari have those.
I couldn't find a Chrome one that was usable. We'll have to talk after the program.
Safari's got quite a few. They've got like 5 that do that.
Andrew, I'm sorry, Firefox.
Well, we were just talking about Firefox has seemed to have lost their way a little bit too with what they're doing. But now this payload which we loaded up today was less in file size than the Chrome one was, and it actually seemed to load. You were in the office when we tried this, Dr. Ron.
Yep.
The Firefox one actually seemed to load quicker than the Chrome version.
I had to pause Lego Star Wars while you were testing it. No, it did. It did load faster. I was impressed with the load time. The actual footprint, the installation footprint on the machine is comparable with Chrome. It's pretty small executable.
Yeah. So if you're using Firefox, now might be a time to hit the upgrade button. But it boasts many major new changes, both in the interface as well as the programming. And this is over the last version, obviously. But it's basically designed to allow ease of use of CSS style sheets, which is how the web developers talk stylishly to lay out the graphics on the web page that you're looking at. And the new version also allows users to migrate bookmarks, history, and cookies from Google's Chrome browser. Wonder who their target market is then. Mozilla has further modified media controls for HTML5 as well, so it supports all the new good stuff that's out there on the World Wide Web.
The one thing about Firefox is there's a very active and very large community of developers out there who are fully aware of the criticisms of Firefox, and they're no doubt as aware as we are, or more so, that they've went down the bloatware track a little bit too far, and Chrome sort of showed us a different way, and everybody's, had a look at something different now, and they are the type of developer community that is going to take that on board and adjust and go with the newer ways of thinking. So it may be that Firefox will make a comeback.
Well, it's in there with a chance, and I must admit it did load very quickly in the office compared to what it used to.
If nothing else, having a third browser out there. Whether you count Chrome as the third one or Firefox as the third one, compared with IE, with the very active and very rapid development, it is only going to sort of further the development of the technology. They all these projects feed into each other. When Chrome came out, it looked very different to all the others, but now IE9 and the new Firefox are taking all that on board, and it's feeding back into the other browsers.
Competition's good.
Yeah, good summary. Yeah, I could have said that in much less words, couldn't I?
No, it was good.
Well, Internet Explorer's version 10 is coming out fairly shortly.
Oh, what?
Really?
Oh, listen, you guys.
When will they give up? Just stop. Just stop
what
it.
What did I just say?
Didn't they stop in Europe? It's an option now.
See, competition's good if they both continue to try and beat each other and innovate, but IE just sit there like a blob doing absolutely nothing.
No, they don't. No. The IE changed significantly in the last couple of versions.
They want to.
Yeah, and they did.
So that some organisations have moved up to IE 7 and 8 now.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's good. Anyway, Metro... You know that Metro look, the Metro tablets and things like that are all coming?
Yeah, the big blocks that you can touch with your fingers, but you get them even on your PC.
Yeah.
What you're saying is that they're making a Windows 8-looking web browser.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ooh.
Pretty much. I don't know how that's going to sit with a lot of people.
I do. How? Not very well.
Yeah, well. Anyway, Metro is an adaptation of the tile-based user interface that Microsoft developed for Phone 7. And look how well that went.
Yes.
Mm. With bits of words hanging off the edge of the screen. Yes. Only one person I know who went to Phone 7, that was Brian in the office, and he jumped ship fairly quickly after that.
Well, I didn't mind that interface. I thought that was clever.
Ron.
With the words sort of starting to hang a bit off the screen, it gave you a bit of an indication that there's more there. I want to swipe it. I want to see what else there is.
Yeah, well, that was exactly the intention. Yeah, and that interface was designed for that sort of device.
Mm.
But I don't want it on my laptop, thank you.
Trent in our chat room says IE equals... idiot entrapment.
I wasn't going to read that out because I thought that might have been a bit...
I hate the product, not the user. Yeah.
Yes.
Hate the product, not the user.
Hate the product.
Anyway.
Definitely hate that product.
Yes. So under the hood, Microsoft have promised some considerable improvements to the browsing engine. And obviously a plug-in free HTML5 support. Because didn't they need a plug-in for
IE9? And no doubt Microsoft will claim that it is even more standards compliant than the previous version, which they always claim and which is always found to be somewhat dubious.
I wonder if Microsoft will have a launch.
Oh, of course they will.
No, we haven't been to one for a while, have we, Dr. Ron? I think the last one we went to was IE8. Was it IE8 or IE9 that we went to?
I think it might have been IE8.
Yeah, it was a while back.
They cooked us breakfast.
They did.
Yeah, it was very nice.
They overlooked us on IE9. Who knows? Something might happen on IE10.
Mm.
Did you not use a napkin?
Well.
They didn't invite you back because you were sloppy eaters. I want free breakfast.
Hi, Michael. Send us an invite. If you have one. Oh, dear. So there you go. A bit of IE10 news. Now, also this week, which you alluded to in the beginning of the news, Dr. Ron, is that Vodafone rumour mongering is rife.
It's all rumour and speculation. Let's just say that at the top of this discussion.
But I was moved by a few tweets there. Someone alleged that Tech Talk Radio was looking at buying Vodafone. I don't think so.
We're all going to put in $10.
Well, maybe that's what it was. But in all seriousness,
Adam Turner was going to nominate Graham as CEO.
Yeah, he did. I saw that tweet go past too.
Yes.
It was very frivolous that day, let me tell you.
It was a report in The Australian last week, just a report, and they said that they thought that the carrier was looking for buyers. And that a memorandum
on the issue... is that what it was?
Well, they said a memorandum on the issue had been issued to potential buyers, including telcos and investment houses in Asia and Europe. Mm. Vodafone...
They're testing the water, maybe.
Vodafone didn't directly... deny the inquiry, but they just said, look, our...
That proves it must be true.
This is it. They just said, well, we're committed to our operations in Australia and our sole focus is on running the business. So.
Really?
Mm.
Okay.
Told you
just
it was a slow news week.
Fix your call dropouts. Well, have they fixed
it? They're working on it. We've had this discussion before.
It'd be a good opportunity for a telco someone to buy it.
They called you, Lena.
They did.
Lena's a Vodafone user and someone from the network called her and said, where do you call
dropouts?
That's
not a personal question. How are your drops these days?
Pretty good.
Yeah? You haven't had them anywhere near as what you used to? Or?
Not anywhere near as bad as it used to be.
Yeah, because no one's on the network anymore. They've lost their users in hundreds of 500,000 and then 300,000, I think, were the numbers.
Well, they're running a promotional campaign at the moment to try and... get people to come back to the network.
A free cricket bat?
No. They're running a try it for 30 days promotion at the moment.
Oh, it's that bad, is it?
Yeah, I've actually watched a television during the course of the week, so I've found out about these things.
What? Graham watched telly? An antenna?
Yes.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No.
Whoa.
Oh, dear.
Hell just froze over.
I've
got all tingly.
And what I learned was this Vodafone ad, and they're saying that they've done a lot of work on the network, and they're saying that they want customers to come back and try it. and that if you're not happy after 30 days, you can just pay for the calls you've used and return the phone and away you go. So they're trying to...
Desperate measures, desperate times, maybe.
Well, or they've improved the network and the reputation they've got is not as deserved as it once was.
Maybe. Yeah,
I think
perhaps.
So.
Yeah, but
as the only Vodafone user in the room,
yeah.
I think I have to say they are getting better and they're trying really hard to make it better.
Well, that's good.
I think that you've got to give them kudos for that.
Well, you
and
do.
Now, if Optus are going to build a 4G network, they're going to have to shake the slow internet tag that they've picked up along the way.
You
too.
Mean the oversold network?
Yeah, well,
tag. Which
everybody oversold their networks, but yeah, Optus might have.
But when they had the capacity
gone
to
a
do
touch
that
further than anybody else.
Did you see the tweets from the Grand Prix during the course of the weekend about everyone carrying on about the lack of data service and tweet availability from trackside?
Going round and round and round.
I know. You should have seen the aeroplane that went round and round and round too.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Oh,
taxpayer dollars were spewing out of the back of it.
Yeah, it was. I went very much so. Very much so. Yes, no, Qantas sent the plane down.
I went down the peninsula and just avoided it all completely.
You weren't the only one, I don't think.
No.
Sorry, what were we talking about? Oh, Vodafone.
Vodafone, yes.
Yeah. I think, yeah, kudos to them.
Yeah, and well, who would buy it? It's a great opportunity for an up-and-coming upstart to buy and get in there and put an under new management sign on the front of it.
An
you know?
Up-and-coming upstart.
Yeah.
That's a new
like
one.
Dick Smith could get in there and get it. Yeah, stick
he's
with me.
Not an
he's not an up-and-coming.
No, I mean Dick as in Dick Smith, not as in the chain that you, yeah. the supermarket chain. Like Dick Smith could get in there and do
nah.
something.
Nah.
But Jerry
no,
Harvey.
Done. Oh, God. Don't get me started.
He's got a big bag
Jerry
of money.
Jerry Harvey. I hate.
Really?
Okay. Or it's just a thought.
You wouldn't be able to buy a plan online. You'd have to walk into
the
store
exactly.
to do it.
No, yeah. exactly. Yeah. And then he'd change his mind. Afterwards. Yow.
But you'd get a free washing machine, though.
Yeah, because yeah, I need eight of those.
It wouldn't get delivered. You'd have to go down and pick it up.
Correct.
No, well, whoever does buy Vodafone, I'm...
Lucky this is just the warm-up show. I'm glad we're not going to wear for another 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
You wouldn't want some of this stuff to go to air.
Oh, I certainly
lucky
would not.
It's a practice round.
That's it.
I'm going to play a music track in
whoever does buy Vodafone, I'm more than happy to consider the offers that you'd like to put to me to run the show for you. That's
yeah, you'd
that's
be good
I'll...
CEO.
Well, Adam thinks so. That's all I'm going to say.
I think you would be very diplomatic.
Diplomatic?
Yes.
Is that the sense you've got of me? So
I think, I think you'd be good at
that. You've been paying attention?
You like to be surrounded by smart people who disagree with you.
I like to be surrounded by smart people.
Yes. But smart people who disagree with you is better than
well,
than people who agree
with
you. Because then they're yes men, and no one likes a yes man.
Well, you
well,
might
smart
need
people
a,
don't.
Perhaps we should say smart people with a range of opinions.
That's good. Yes. That's very good.
You watched television during the course of the week, Graeme. What brought that on?
I'm trying to remember, actually. I think I just got curious.
Oh, okay. You just got curious. The world of PVRs, personal video recorders, is in the news again at the moment. Have
yes.
you had a PVR?
Yeah. I've got two or three collecting dust on the floor, none of which work properly.
Oh, yeah.
I've got the Play TV, which acts as a PVR, and that's what I was tinkering with during the week, and that sometimes works properly.
Yeah. I've got a PVR. I've never used it.
Have
I think
you,
I've recorded,
you've never used it.
I've recorded two shows on it in the history of my life, and I think if you played them back, they're dating like they're Better Homes and Gardens from 2 years ago or something like that, which I did for my wife.
Oh, okay. Mm. There you go.
But no one uses a PVR at our place. Dr. Ron, what about your place?
I have a Windows Media Center.
Okay, moving
which has
on.
Got a, okay.
That's I've not got a PVR, is it? Well, I guess it is.
Well,
it records, doesn't it?
It performs that function. It has Windows Media Center on a PC. It's got a digital tuner card inside it, so I can record programs off air,
yeah.
but haven't done so for years. Oh. I could probably dispense with it and I wouldn't even notice.
Lena, do you record?
We've got a TiVo.
That's not a PVR.
Yeah, it records stuff.
Yeah, it does.
Same thing.
But it's not off air.
It's sort of a crippled, TVR.
Yeah.
PVR, whatever.
Because the biggest issue these days is the problem
crippled.
Of PVRs of not recording the whole show or missing the start time and all that
yes,
sort of
because
stuff.
Because the program guides are all protected and it doesn't do it. Like, now, this is a problem that my mother has the Foxtel PVR called the IQ.
Does that work, as in gets everything?
It does better than the free-to-air ones because it can actually follow, it can actually look up the program guide and find out when the program's on and all that sort of stuff.
Does it have CRID?
I don't know what it... No, it has Foxtel.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's all built into Foxtel.
This week's View from the Couch tells us all about CRID.
What's CRID?
You'll find out. Here's Adam.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
The first Freeview PVRs are finally on the shelves, but unfortunately they make promises they can't always keep. It's taken several years, but Australia is finally seeing the first personal video recorders which are compatible with the Freeview-endorsed electronic program guide. Until now, Freeview has been little more than a branding exercise with a not-so-hidden agenda to stamp out ad skipping. I've been one of Freeview's harshest critics, labelling it as little more than a cynical marketing campaign trying to dress up what we already had as something new and exciting while fighting off pay TV. But with this new EPG coming to personal video recorders, Freeview actually has something to offer, so I think it deserves another look. The new Freeview Electronic Program Guide relies on the same program information included in the standard EPG that's embedded in the broadcast signal and available to all digital TV devices. The difference is that the Freeview EPG uses something called CRID data, Content Reference Identifier, to label shows and series. It can use this data to detect when a show actually starts and finishes rather than when it's supposed to start and finish. Some people think that the Freeview EPG still relies on the now and next data to know when to stop recording, but Freeview's engineers assure me that it's the CRID data calling the shots. If the schedule says your show has finished but it's still running, recorders using the Freeview EPG will check this CRID data and keep recording. In theory, you should never miss the end of a show again. Freeview goes as far as to make the following promise on its website. If you have a digital video recorder, the next generation EPG is so smart that you'll never miss the beginning or end of recorder programs. That's a pretty big promise. Now, another shortcoming of the standard EPG is that each network only broadcasts its own program guide because they won't cooperate. So if you keep your PVR on one channel, it doesn't receive the EPG updates for the other channels. The Freeview EPG solves this by including the entire program guide for every channel. Now, Freeview ensures that only authorized devices can access this new EPG by running it on a special software platform called MHEG-5. Unfortunately, most early Freeview boxes aren't MHEG-5 compatible and so can't be upgraded to support this new EPG. You'll need to check with the manufacturer or look for a handful of new PVRs from the likes of Bush, Grundig and Pixel Magic, which sport the Freeview EPG logo rather than the standard Freeview logo. Truth be told, the free-to-air networks have lifted their game when it comes to EPG accuracy, admittedly after threats from the Australian Communications and Media Authority. The mongrels still let shows run late to discourage you from changing the channels, a practice known as bridging. But now they're issuing up-to-the-minute EPG data, which indicates if a show really runs from 7.03 to 7.34 rather than 7 to 7.30. It's a nice idea and a way of bending the rules, but even this supposedly up-to-the-minute data can still be wrong sometimes. Sometimes it's wrong deliberately. And so we come to Bush's BVR501FE, one of the first personal video recorders to support Freeview's new EPG. It's been around for a while, but Freeview recently upgraded its EPG, so I thought it was time to test it out. At $349 with twin HD tuners and a 500 gig hard drive, it would seem like the perfect PVR. Unfortunately, my PVR wasn't rock solid and had a few stability issues. I'm happy to put this aside. What I'm more interested in is the Freeview EPG. Considering that Freeview had the chance to reinvent the EPG from scratch, it's disappointing that the on-screen guide looks exactly like the bog-standard guide. When you look at the impressive EPG employed by new devices such as Telstra's T-Box, it's disappointing that Freeview couldn't do any better than rehash the existing format. A cynic might think the only reason to use MHEG 5 is to lock out non-Freeview devices. Looks aren't everything, but unfortunately this new PVR's ugliness isn't just skin deep. Press record while watching a program and it only records for 30 minutes regardless of how long the show has to go. Most recorders are smart enough to figure this out. Now, Freeview isn't to blame for this as the decisions are made by the box maker, so it's Bush that needs to lift its game there. Unfortunately, this new Freeview PVR puts its absolute faith in the EPG. There's no way to extend recordings with pre or post padding. You can't add global padding, you can't add it to individual recordings. Now, I'm told this isn't a Freeview restriction, but once again, it's at the discretion of the PVR maker. Bush has decided not to include padding, but I think it's a mistake, as even 1 minute of post padding can often save the day, as we're about to discover. The Freeview EPG does pick up last-minute schedule changes, so if your show changes to a different night or runs an hour late, it's probably going to notice. but it still managed to miss the last few seconds of shows, including Nine's Top Gear. I'm not talking about just a few seconds of the credits, I'm talking about almost a minute, cut off while people were in mid-sentence. If you've just paid good money for a PVR that's supposed to make sure you'll never miss the end of your favourite shows again, you won't be happy at this point. Keep in mind that many shows now run back to back with no credits or ads in between, or jump straight into the action and then show the credits later, so if you miss even more than a second, you can miss something important. So how did the infallible Freeview EPG manage such an epic fail? It seems the Nine network is having ongoing technical difficulties with its CRID data and is urgently working towards a solution. So we're back where we started. Absolutely screwed and at the mercy of the networks. It's enough to make you scream. So despite Freeview's best efforts, it seems the networks can still spoil your big night in. Until that CRID data is absolutely reliable, Freeview PVRs won't always be able to keep their promises.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
CRID is Content Reference Identifier. There you go. That's the acronym. CRID, which is what the TV stations apparently transmit except for Channel 9, according to Adam.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that is a live update. The other thing, too, which you mentioned there is the ability for other programming information from other networks to be on the same data, on the CRID data, right across the whole free-to-air. So that'd be really good because, you know, the moment you turn your telly on, you have to browse up to Channel 2 or to Channel 7 or whichever channel you want to know what's on before the data appears on your telly?
Yes,
wouldn't it be good if you just turn your telly on and it's all there? That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
I've noticed that in the electronic program guides, you've got to actually go to the channel and select it before you can
really
see what...
Yeah, it's really dumb.
It is, yeah.
That'd be just a concept, wouldn't it? Anyway, we might take a break, shall we?
Let's do that.
We shall. Have a listen to some lovely music and we'll come back with all sorts of interesting things, including the big week it was in computer games.
You've got the rest of the program to yourself.
Yeah, yeah, we're going out to the car park. We'll leave you to it.
Cool. See you guys.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Adobe's going to stop doing Flash. That's pretty good. What links would you go to watch free-to-air television?
Not me.
I was at GCAP, which is the Game Connect Asia Pacific conference.
I told you it was GC something.
It's exciting times, isn't it?
The ACCC doesn't do anything either, to be fair.
And Andrew's just grimaced because he's one of those web designers that thinks that he should have control over everything about the way a website looks.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Bless you, Graham. Other things happened during the course of the week.
He lost his sneeze.
Timing's,
I hate that.
Timing's just impeccable for a sneeze, isn't it? In radio, it's great. So
look at the light. Look at the light.
Dear. We were talking about safe harbour laws a while back. In fact, a lot of people have been talking about safe harbour laws. That's for internet service providers not to be held liable for the content which is on their systems.
Or now, the traffic that their users look at, or content their users download.
Exactly. Now, here's an interesting court ruling from a German court saying that the...
The German court?
Yes.
The Germans.
Yes. Oh, no, we won't go there. John Cleese is in town at the moment, by the way. But did you know?
Yes, he is.
No, he is. Anyway, now, what I was going to say was a court in Germany found that the file hosting service RapidShare, you know RapidShare? It's one of those sort of like free hosting things where you put your file up and people come and download it down the track for work, pleasure or otherwise.
Like YouSendIt.com or something like that.
Yeah, sort of, but it can be made publicly available and linked publicly and do all that sort of stuff. Anyway, the German court found that it needs, or it's ordering RapidShare to actually filter users' uploads, obviously to make sure that they don't put anything up that they shouldn't put up.
Okay.
Wonder if this is a turning point, a watershed moment for the for these type of organisations where people tend to stick things up online.
And who's the mob again? Sorry,
RapidShare.
RapidShare. Has RapidShare accepted the court order? Are they going to appeal it, or what are they going to do?
I'm not sure. RapidShare is yet to decide whether to appeal the verdict and informs the Torrent Freak that there's also positive news to report. So obviously they use it for peer-to-peer stuff, which is probably half the reason why they get behind, or why the courts are behind it, saying, no, no, look at what you're putting up, type sort of stuff. That's Germany, though. But TorrentShare, I think, RapidShare, I think, is a US company. So I don't know how they have to stick to the court order. Maybe they do in Germany. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they do. If they defy a court order, they could be held in contempt of that court.
Potentially.
So if they're... if they object to it, if they take umbrage with the court order, they've got a right to appeal it. So we'll have to wait and see what they do.
All right, Anonymous. You remember Anonymous, the hacking group?
Yes, we have to be serious now. Don't upset Anonymous.
No, I'm just reporting the facts here.
They are handsome.
They released a...
lovely.
We'll send them cake.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea. And a portal gun.
Ooh.
An Ubuntu operating system developed under the auspices of the Anonymous movement has been taken down from SoundForge due to security firms. Now, SoundForge is one of those places where you download all the free sort of software, shareware.
Distros.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. Anyway, the operating system came preloaded with anonymity and hacking applications, including ParallelPass, Pylorus, which allows password cracking, SQL injection, and Anonymous surfing via the Tor network, just to name a few.
Yes.
So, anyway, they put it up there and people were tweeting, oh, it's full of Trojans and full of that. Well, yeah, probably is with these guys
being
involved.
Being compiled by Anonymous.
Yeah.
What were you expecting?
Yeah, exactly. That's my point, exactly. So,
well, my machine appears to have been hijacked.
But those tools you mentioned have all got legitimate uses. They're not necessarily purely used for non-legitimate use.
That's true, but Anonymous doesn't have a legitimate use.
Correct.
So I'd be dubious about anything like that coming from Anonymous.
The rare takedown followed a tweet circulating yesterday from popular Anonymous account AnonOps that claimed that the Anon OS was laced with Trojans.
Anon OS, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so if you're a Linux person, there's one to try on your netbook, Graham. He's tapping away there with his little lights.
He's got a new gadget. Leave him alone.
He has. I'm going to talk to him about the patches that Microsoft have actually brought out in the last week or so. We had
Patch
Tuesday.
Yeah, we need to talk about that, yeah.
Now,
one of them in particular.
Critical. Which one?
Okay, the one that patches remote desktop protocol. What was
remote desktop? Now, what does that let you do?
Lets you view your desktop, the desktop of one computer from another computer.
Okay.
So, for example, I can connect to my home network and then connect to my home computer using remote desktop protocol to remotely operate my home computer from out and about. More critically, I can connect to my customers' networks and I can use remote desktop protocol to remotely do management tasks on their servers. So let's say somebody needs a new email mailbox set up. I can log into the Exchange server, set up the new mailbox, configure it, all that sort of stuff, all remotely by using remote desktop protocol to access the desktop of the server.
Okay. So what happened? What was the hole that they found?
RDP has been in... almost every Windows version from Windows XP onwards, and there was a vulnerability found which allowed a remote user to...
That's the person you're connected to with the remote connection.
No, a user...
Or someone, anyone.
Yeah, someone who's not physically at the console of your machine to use... to send a specially crafted command or connection packet to the remote desktop service on your computer from a remote location to basically gain full access to your machine without authorization. So they could then install, say, a Trojan or something like that on your computer to gain, to make use of your computer.
A Microsoft person, Alex Horan, said this is the holy grail of exploits. It's pretty big.
It's one of those exploits that is going to be exploitable on a very large number of machines because a lot of
machines, even though RDP is supposedly turned off by default on most computers, it's frequently turned on and frequently turned on in bulk by policies in corporate networks, so that you can, so that the IT staff can remotely, you know, fix computers and work on computers without physically travelling to them. Yep. So if you have if you design a worm that can infect one computer and then use this exploit to use the open remote, the remote desktop service on other computers that's exploitable to install itself on all the other computers, then this worm could spread very rapidly through a corporate network that's got RDP turned on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's only turned on the servers, they're probably the best resourced and best connected computers in the organisation, and it's going to cause the most havoc. So,
all right, so this patch came out last week.
The patch was released with the normal batch of patches on Patch Tuesday, yep. And at that time, and as far as I know at this time, there still hasn't been a worm written to take advantage of this exploit.
Yeah.
The very fact that Microsoft have now released the patch, the contents of the patch itself provide clues to the hackers as to how to exploit it.
Oh, so they can reverse engineer it.
They'll reverse engineer
the patch
to find out how to exploit the...
You can't win, can you?
No. Well, the only way that we can win as users is to make sure that we install this patch on all the machines that have got RDP turned on. And if you're not sure, install it anyway.
Which is any XP, Vista or Windows 7 operating system, any Windows servers.
Any currently supported Windows machine. There are no exceptions. Okay, any currently supported Windows machine should install this patch.
So what is currently supported? Anything from XP, Graham?
Anything from Windows XP onwards.
Okay.
Yep. So that includes all the servers. It includes Windows XP. It includes Vista, Windows 7, Server 2003, Server 2008, across the board. Okay?
All right.
So if you're,
updates,
if you're a corporate administrator and you manually do updates on your servers, which a lot of administrators do, make sure you do install this one. Okay, if you need to spend an extra couple of hours one night testing it to make sure it's fine, do it. It's worth doing this one. Okay, this one is going to be important.
Very good.
Okay, and if you go and look at my Twitter feed, I've got links there to
Have you tweeted again?
I've tweeted again.
Well, must be important if Graham's tweeted.
Links there to the Microsoft article and the news story about what's going on. So if you're not sure exactly which patch to load up, the Microsoft article that I've linked to will help you with that.
Yep.
But for ordinary users, and I know I've talked a lot about some techo stuff that, you know, only the boffins are going to understand. For ordinary users, if you make sure that your automatic Windows updates are on, then you are protected. It will install with the automatic updates if you've got that turned on. So if you're an ordinary Windows user and you're scared by this, which you should be, just think back to yourself. Over the last couple of weeks, have you seen Windows tell you that when it's shutting down, that it's installing updates? And if so, have you let it install the updates that it wants to install? Now, if it has asked you to install updates and you have allowed it to install the updates, then you're the good guys. You're fine. If you if it hasn't asked you or you told it not to, then make sure you go and make sure, turn that setting on to make sure it always loads the automatic updates, and you will be safe. If you don't know how to do that, go and find, you know, some geeky person like me or anyone on the panel, or, you know, the local
14-year-old
or a 14-year-old,
yeah,
who'll help you to turn it on.
Yeah.
Okay, or
she,
ask in the forum or whatever.
What about the Bendigo Bank?
If you work for the Bendigo Bank, then you should know better.
Yeah, you should actually do it yourself, because they turn in their computers off now overnight for the patch rollouts and things like that. Anyway, there you go. All right, thank you, Graham. Words of wisdom there for all PC users. Mac people, you can tune back in again now. Hackers have released Norton Antivirus's source code. I don't know whether you caught this going past, and I just thought it was worth a mention here. But the 2006 version of Symantec's widely used Norton Antiviruses on the net. That is the actual instructional code which talks to your talks to the computer to get it to do things.
Source code is the language that programmers write in, and it's then compiled into the language that the computer actually runs, you know, natively, that the computer understands. So it's an intermediate in between the human world and the computer world.
It's very bad. As soon as you hear something like that, you think, that's bad. You don't want source code being released into the wild.
It'd be like Windows releasing their keys to their palace, wouldn't it?
Well, that's right. commercial software, you usually don't get to see the source code because that's their trade secret. That's how they maintain their control over their own code. That's in contrast to what you've heard about open source software like Linux and things like that, where the source code is available to anyone, and anyone who understands the programming language can go through and see how it works and understand it, which is a big contrast to the closed source world, where the users, and you know, even if they do understand programming language, don't get to see what it's doing. And some people consider that to be a big risk in running closed source software, because you don't really know what it's doing under the hood. So it would be like having a padlock keeping the bonnet of your car closed, so you can't see what the engine's doing underneath. You can't check the oil yourself.
The obvious danger is that some malicious ne'er-do-well will modify the code slightly and recompile it and re-release it and pretend that it's a legitimate semantic installer, and for all intents and purposes it will look like one. It will look pretty much identical, but they could incorporate obviously malicious stuff within the package, and you wouldn't want that. But 2006, though, that's
yeah, but there's still
old,
a fair bit.
It's old code, but there would be still a lot of machines out there that would probably be running that. That's all bad. How did that happen? Semantic would be very red-faced.
They actually came out and said that it wasn't a big concern for them, whether that was whether that was a concern to waylay fears in the community or not.
I think it's a concern that they don't think it's a concern, to be quite just quietly.
Anyway, that's the joys. I must admit, I put my conspiracy cap on with antivirus and anti-Trojan type sort of things. I think we'll put it this way. What other business in technology do you know that when they've got a slow week, they can ramp up their own sales by saying, oh, watch out, there's a virus on the field?
That's a very...
Is it just me?
I think it's just you.
All right. Time to move on, shall we?
It is, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, thank you.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
That's me.
It is. It's your theme song.
I do love my theme song. I want it to play every time I enter a room. Not quite.
Would you like it for your ringtone? We could do that for you.
I can only think of one person in the entire world that has a particular piece of music play whenever they walk into a room.
The President of the United States.
Yeah, that's the guy, yeah.
Yep.
Well, you're second to him then, huh?
POTUS, yeah. We've got a really local game segment tonight. So I'll start
local?
With our...
Well, what's Rondon? He's been playing what?
No, I'll start with our only overseas story first, shall
I? All right.
And then the rest is all homegrown. Double Fine. Do you remember I spoke about them a little while ago with their Kickstarter campaign? They crowdfunded their next adventure point-and-click adventure
game. Yeah, and they asked for some dollars and they got a gazillion dollars.
They did. They've actually concluded their campaign now. They've cut off their time where you can send in a backing, and they've got 8 times the amount they originally looked for.
It's pretty good.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all. The Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign concluded yesterday, amassing a total of $3.3
million. Million dollars.
For a point-and-click adventure, which people were saying before this was a dead genre. So
now, to paraphrase, with great funding comes great responsibility.
Indeed. it aimed for
they'd
only...
They better use this money well, or
they will
never, ever see any of it again.
I think people trust Double Fine, and that's why people have gotten behind it so much, is they really do send out products with an amazing level of polish, and usually a lot of humour as well, which is something
which always helps, yes.
Yeah, something that wins people over. They originally only aimed for $400,000, and they reached that in 8 hours, which set a Kickstarter record along the way. In total, 87,000 users have backed the Double Fine adventure game. So that's an amazing endeavour. Absolutely fantastic, and they should be very, very proud of themselves, and I look forward to seeing what they're making. That's our only overseas story.
So the rest are local.
The rest is local.
What happened overseas? Didn't it happen last week?
Well, no, not really. It's more exciting here.
Oh, excellent.
Which is fun.
Well, you were saying that Australia's a bit of a game hub, isn't it?
We are. We're a small but intimate community. The Free Play Independent Games Festival has announced their dates and the theme for this year, which is very exciting. You know, that's my favourite festival in the whole entire world. Of course. I was an associate producer last year, and I'm on the...
So they're having you back.
I hope so. No, I'm on the advisory committee.
Can you
this
take
year?
Your theme with you?
I could.
When you rock up on stage to do your keynote, you can play your theme.
Oh, I don't do a keynote, but yes. it'll be on from September 19th to the 23rd at the State Library of Victoria, and the theme this year is Chaos and Grace. Ooh.
Chaos and grace.
Yeah. So that'll be fantastic. I'm really, really excited. Keep an eye on freeplay.net.au for more details as they come, especially about chaos? Ticketing and things like that.
K-A-O-S?
No.
No. Okay.
C-H-A-O-S.
Oh. Siegfried?
Yes. Another exciting local news story. R18 legislation for games has passed the House of Representatives.
Oh, hooray. That's
We're
the hard one.
There.
It's just got to go to the Senate now. Then what happens?
I think the Senate's the hard one, isn't it?
That's Conroy's up there. He won't want to attract attention.
No, better not. It's passed without amendment. The next step is the Senate.
Has it been to the Senate before? Is this its first submission?
First submission.
So it's been ticked and gone up to the Red House.
It is. And then
what happens?
Brendan O'Connor's replacement as Minister for Home Affairs has remained on message, thankfully, saying the R18 category will inform consumers, parents and retailers about which games are not suitable for minors to play.
Good.
And will prevent minors from purchasing unsuitable material.
Yeah, that's what we want to hear. That's
Yay.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good.
See,
finally.
Bad luck,
though,
people in West Australia. No mining boom over there.
1 + 1 = 2. And we're finally figuring that out.
We are thinking of the children.
We are thinking of
the
children.
How long has it taken? We've been talking
Forever.
About this ever since
taken until
the
now. Yeah.
Until now.
Yeah.
The reform also means that adults are able to choose what games they play within the bounds of the law. Hallelujah. Once the bill passes through the Senate, though, each state and territory must pass their own legislation.
Hang on, how does that work? Because it's federal law, isn't it? But the censorship's on a state basis, is it?
Yeah, classification boards are within... They can have their own little laws, I think.
Now, hang on, let me... get this clear in my mind. I think classification is federal, but the laws that pertain to classification are state.
Yeah.
So the federal level, they decide what's in which category.
Yeah.
But then you have a state law that says that you can do this with that category and you can do that with that category.
Yes. Yes. Mark Serrells from Kotaku said, "Still, it's progress, and progress is good, and I'm inclined to agree."
Yes. Mm.
Progress is good, even if it's just a little bit.
Heading in the right direction anyway.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. Still in local news, Melbourne Symphony Orchestra.
Refer to previous shows if you want to know why that's such an important issue.
It is. It's so exciting. Melbourne Symphony Orchestra is performing Video Games Unplugged, the Symphony of Legends, featuring music from leading games of the last 10 years, including Elder Scrolls Skyrim, Bioshock 2, Final Fantasy, Uncharted 2 and 3, Assassin's Creed 2, Soul Calibur, Civilization, Secret of Mana, Heavy Rain, World of Warcraft, Diablo 3 and StarCraft 2.
So can I get this right? The Melbourne Symphony Orchestra is playing computer game music.
Yep.
That's cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Where are they doing that?
This will be at the Melbourne Exhibition and Convention Centre. On Thursday, April 12th.
At Jeff Shed.
If you're coming to town, check it out. Go and listen to some computer games. They're playing some of the really old ones, like the scene from Galaga.
The last 10 years, no.
Oh, damn.
Otherwise, that's chiptunes otherwise. And there's many, many things going on for that sort of thing. The tickets range from $49 to $139 for adults.
Wow.
And $29 to $79 for concessions.
You can do a CD?
I don't know. They might. What are you doing?
Who's playing that?
I don't know. You're hijacking.
Oh, it's just classic games soundtrack music.
The concert will feature.
I've got that's classic like games totes. Background music.
Oh, no.
Oh, stop it.
No, that's not music.
Let me speak.
Sorry.
The concert will feature backdrop displays with gameplay footage and cutscenes, as well as solos by musicians who actually played the music on the original games.
Oh,
which
cool.
Is really, really cool.
That's great. Yeah. I love that idea.
That's a real boon. It's hosted by Scott Kurtz and Chris Strab of Penny Arcade TV's The Scott and Chris Show. And Will Wheaton will also make an appearance on the night.
What about Sheldon?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Will Wheaton. Will Wheaton, for those of you who don't know, Graham, would you like to enlighten them?
Yeah, Wesley
Crusher
from Star Trek: The Next Generation. Yes.
He was also
Sheldon's nemesis in
Archenemy.
Correct. Yes.
And he was in Stand By Me. He was Gordon.
Was he?
Stand By Me.
Yeah, that's right. He was too.
With the leeches.
The leeches.
Let's move on.
Speaking of symphony orchestras.
It's a wealth of information, this segment.
Yeah. The Melbourne Fighting Game Clan Couch Warriors is doing a fighting game tournament on March 31st. So this is all, you remember, like Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, Tekken, Super Smash Brothers Brawl, all those sort of fighting games. If you're in Melbourne and you want to come and check it out, March 31st, you should mark down in your diary. Today, the Melbourne-based social group Couch Warriors, which is an awesome name for what they are, announced its first Fighters Festival for the year with a focus on the social aspect. as well as the games.
The social aspect of fighting with each other.
Well, the social aspect of a competition.
So they play like Red Dead Redemption first and have a bit of digital alcohol and then come and fight? Is that how that works?
No, not quite. No. People take it very seriously. Some people do. There will be some serious competitors there, but people who don't want to take it so seriously, such as myself, will still be looked after, with Couch Warriors hosting giveaways and special training sessions.
It's very important, really.
And lots of booze. Special training sessions to help improve your skills throughout the day
digital?
And to teach people the ways of your fighting game of choice. Not digital. No.
Will there be cosplay?
Well, hold them in my hands. That's digital,
okay,
right?
Okay, yeah.
There might be cosplayers there. There probably would be one or two walking around.
Is Melbourne the hub of computer games in Australia, is it? Because it all seems to be very Melbourne-centric news for gaming.
It's getting there. We have got a massive community here, and it's fantastic to be a part of it.
How does it compare to other centres, or is it just it's sort of migrated down here?
Brisbane used to be a lot bigger than what it is now. We all used to be a bit bigger than what we are now, but it is becoming very Melbourne-centric, which is great. Now, when I said before, speaking of the symphony orchestra, Couch Warriors is teaming up with Eminence Symphony Orchestra to host qualifying rounds for a special tournament. So players who qualify at this,
bring your own
this
instrument.
Festival no, will take to the stage at various Eminence performances across Melbourne and play Soul Calibur in time to the music.
So they'll be
playing the game.
They play the game,
and it's
to
on the
music.
Screen. Yeah, and it's on the big screen behind
the
people playing
music
the music
live.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It's a cool prize to win. I think that's really cool.
Where do you go to see this? That would be just bizarre to see.
It would be very cool. That's the Eminence Symphony Orchestra.
March 31st,
like,
did you say?
No, that the tournament is on March 31st, and if you qualify through that, then you get to be part
of
the
next thing. Okay, I'm with you.
Yeah, which is a really cool prize. You can find out more details of the Couch Warriors Fighters Festival if you Google them. I don't have a direct website at the moment. I think it's mostly on a Facebook invite basis. It's at the Soleil Bar and Lounge, 694 Mount Alexander Road, Moonee Ponds. And it's $10 entry, which is pretty good.
I'll be there.
Mm.
Sounds like fun.
Will you? Cool.
Maybe. I think it'd be fun to go and see.
It is actually really fun to just watch people play competitively for these sorts of games. It's called esports, and it's just like watching a game of footy or a game of cricket.
Yeah.
You can get behind your favourite player and watch them escalate up the board. Yeah. It's really, really good. And lots of fun. Lots of people who just go there to have a good time and
more exciting than watching golf.
Definitely.
More exciting than watching those cars go round and round.
Definitely. Yeah. So that's what's happening. Lots of local news.
And it's
news.
In Melbourne.
It's in
Best
Melbourne.
City in the world.
Indeed.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lena.
No worries.
Love your work.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If you've thanks, Lena. We're on air now.
Sorry. Banging my microphone.
Banging
around.
Microphones and things like that.
I want to hear what Graham's got to say.
If you're a
he just left.
That's an in joke, and you're about to wear some water there, Doctor. If you're a customer of Australia's number two ISP, iiNet, then chances are you may have noticed that your off-peak and your peak allocations of internet loveliness have merged into one.
They've all been mixed up together in a bucket.
Yeah, this is the case for all users, except if you're on a grandfathered plan. If it's a dairy plan, then you've got to change. You've got to jump into the toolbox and upgrade to a modern plan, and it all gets mixed together. It's iiNet's way of getting you off the old plans, I think. Mm. But nonetheless, what a great idea. No longer off-peak and peak usage. Maybe it's probably got to the point where their peak usage was probably more... their off-peak usage was probably more than their peak usage based on what people do with... internet between midnight and 6 a.m.
It's
automated.
Everybody schedules their torrent server or torrent client to start at the off-peak start time and stop at the off-peak stop time.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I must admit, I did all my work backups between those hours where I copy stuff from one server to another, which was my off-site backups.
Oh, you found a legitimate use for the off-peak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very slow transfer that hour of the night. It's faster during it during the day. Than...
Yeah.
So maybe to spread the love and the load on their services, iiNet have now introduced this anytime quota.
Well, at one stage, TPG were... Every plan had a different definition of when off-peak was, so that...
Oh, that's insane.
But the obvious reason was to try and spread out when everybody started their big downloads or whatever. But, yeah, so this is, I think, a better solution.
Oh, yeah. I'm an iiNet customer. I'm just logging in now to see if there's been any change.
I was at our old place, but we had a grandfather
Is iiNet all nice and still separate now from Internode, or are they starting to merge together a little bit?
I think they've started. I don't know what they're up to. It's probably billing, if anything else.
I'd love to find out from an insider what's going on there between iiNet and Internode.
Someone might pop up in the chat. Keep your eye on the chat, and you might find out.
Send us an email. If you're an insider at Internode or iiNet, send us an email at feedback.techtalkradio.com, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. I'll get it right in a minute. And, we'd love to get some insight into what's going on there, because there are two of our favourite ISPs.
Yes.
We want to keep track of what's going on.
We have a chat room, which goes live to air while the show is. Shook Wish. Spelled S-H-C-K.
Squish. Squish.
Oh, is that how you say it? Squish.
It's easy for you to say.
Hello, newbie in the chat, by the way.
Oh, hi, newbie.
Are we doing shout-outs now? Are
yeah,
we
we're doing shout-outs to newbie. Well, okay. I presume this is newbie who was a recent correspondent.
Yes. Yeah, more than likely.
Yes.
Anyway, we were talking before the last break about Norton having their source code nicked, put publicly available for 2006. Yes, anyway, Squish, according to Lena...
Yeah.
And he said in our chat, hey, all great show, Norton source code was stolen from Indian government servers. They required Symantec to provide the source before agreeing to use it within the Indian government. It's very lol.
It is very lol.
Very lol.
So very, very sensible on the part of the Indian government to want to examine the source to see what it actually does. Not so sensible of them to let it get out, because it's going to make it very difficult for them to get that privilege again in the future.
Yeah. He's put a link there, nakedsecurity.sophos.co... Yeah.
Well, that's... It's shortened in the chat.
I can't. I've got to keep it up here because you're chatting.
We'll put it in the show notes.
The show notes? Yeah, there you go. All right. In other news, Google is going to shake up the website search engine optimization deal very shortly. And in a nutshell, they're planning to penalise the search rankings of websites that overuse search engine optimization techniques. No.
Overuse search engine optimization.
There's a bit of... Read abuse. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of people which... Yeah, they do. They just go over the top in search engine rankings and search engine optimization. And Google's obviously onto it. Matt Cutts, a software engineer with Google's web spam team, I think Matt's actually been on our show, told SXSW, which is the South by Southwest conference last week, the changes to the search crawler could be enacted within weeks. Now, whether this goes hand in hand with their use of the, I think they were chastised in the mainstream media about a more semantic web search result on the Google search, because, you know, like Wolf and Alpha, you can ask it questions and stuff like that, and it gives you an answer. You know, you might ask it what the capital city is of, say, pick a country, any country, or what's the capital city of Victoria? And instead of giving you sites about Melbourne, it might actually tell you about Melbourne. More of a semantic. But it's been happening for a while. But whether or not we're going to see this search engine stuff kick off, be interesting to see. Apparently, Google will target websites that attempt to elevate their search rankings by providing a suspicious amount of keywords on a page, exchanging too many links, or making changes beyond what a normal person would expect.
Link farms.
Yeah, well, didn't they die off because everyone
bought them? They're still around. You see them everywhere.
Google, this has always been a bit of an arms race between the link farmers and Google. And Google have constantly been tweaking their algorithm. They do it very, very regularly to try and avoid people who artificially want to get a higher result. So this is not new. I think it's just the next iteration of something that's been going on for a long while.
I think the good thing about it is once everyone works out how to do it, Google shakes it up a bit.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
And it brings relevance up. I do remember a few years back, though, they did a couple of tweaks, and a lot of organisations, such as real estate agents and things like that, disappeared out of rankings, and car manufacturers disappeared because of certain tweaks that they did. But I'm sure this next...
I also remember a couple of years ago a certain car manufacturer that
the German one
got banned, for doing things that were not considered fair play.
Is it Volvo or BMW? Or
BMW,
that's right.
They had grey text on a grey background, which is invisible to the human eye, but very visible to a search engine. And Google said, no, I don't think so. You're not allowed to do that. That's cheating.
Putin says no.
Putin says no.
So, there you go. There's a bit of Google news for you also this week.
Go Google.
What else has happened that's worth relevant? Oh, yeah, Dr. Ron, in the news we're talking about the new PayPal little app that's coming, which looks pretty cute if you've actually seen the demo on the PayPal website.
There's a little video there which is quite nifty.
Yeah, if you go to markets or you sell stuff out and about or you're, you know, a mobile vendor of sorts, PayPal have got this lovely little blue triangular dongly thing that plugs into your iPhone.
Into the audio socket on the top.
Yeah, it doesn't actually plug into anything else but an iPhone at this point in time. But what it lets you do is you can actually debit someone using their card. You just zip it through the little reader, which is the blue dongly thing that plugs into your audio jack on your iPhone. And then it allows you to debit their account, be it either credit or
Visa, MasterCard, American Express.
Yep.
And you can also use it to deduct from the customer's PayPal account.
Yeah. And it does it all instantly. And then you can magically send a receipt via SMS or
email. Yeah.
What a great idea. And this is the next sort of cashless move we're going to see, isn't it? As people go to markets and say, oh, I'll just swipe your card through. Obviously, there'll be security issues because this is all new. We only saw this come out during the course of the week a couple of days back.
What sort of security issues do you envisage?
Well, just people going, that man is scanning my card. It's not in an accredited credit card reading device. Is it really a PayPal thing type sort of stuff? I don't know.
I reckon it'd be all right. I think, early adopters will start using it. It'll start to become more commonplace.
Until Apple ban the app that it relies on from the iTunes store and it doesn't work anymore.
Really? You reckon that's on the cards?
Yes.
Oh. Why? Because why would Apple do that?
Because Apple would want that transaction to go through the iTunes store.
That's right. It is in competition with Apple.
It's in competition with them. Yeah, Apple would want to get that transaction going through the iTunes store, not going through PayPal.
Apple and PayPal don't play well together.
No.
PayPal don't play well with many people, actually.
No, that's true.
I'm
not a big fan of PayPal.
Yes, I was about to say, Dr. Ron's had issues with PayPal over their method, their costs. I think
there's been a few game developers who use a PayPal donate button on their site, and once they get a certain amount of donations, PayPal won't give them their money.
Really?
Mm.
So, well, I saw something else during the course of the week. Didn't that happen?
If they make such a large amount of money, they say, no, you can't have it. We're gonna keep it. And they go, that's our money.
Yeah, and if you want it, you can do that. Go whistle.
Yeah, well, they say you've got to upgrade to some sort of other PayPal account or some rubbish
with
like
more
that.
Fees and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, they want a piece of the pie. Yeah, absolutely despicable.
There you go. See, depends on which side of the fence you sit on, depends upon whether it's right for you. But then again, let me just say credit card facilities with common banks costs 3 arms, 2 legs and 4 chickens and a cow.
Imagine what it will cost when it's all controlled by iTunes.
Well, you'll have to approach them for a personal loan to buy your house next, won't you?
Yep.
The Bank of Apple.
They're not in the house selling
not
business.
Yet.
They never will be. Stop saying stupid things about Apple. It's annoying.
I'm sorry.
are you suggesting that Apple don't want to get control of everybody's finances?
If they want,
they don't want them to buy everything through the iTunes store?
Not houses, no.
There's other things we should talk about tonight, but we're out of time.
I like the concept. I think it's a good. The actual hardware device is good. You can plug something into a mobile device.
Which part of we're out of time did you have trouble understanding, Dr. Ron?
Oh.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Adobe's going to stop doing Flash. That's pretty good.
What lengths would you go to watch free-to-air television?
Not me.
I was at GCAP, which is the Game Connect Asia Pacific conference.
I told you it was GC something.
It's exciting times, isn't it?
The ACCC doesn't do anything either, to be fair.
And Andrew's just grimaced because he's one of those web designers that thinks that he should have control over everything about the way a website looks.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
And I think that's what we'll start to see as this technology gets more and more prevalent. sorry. Have we started the next segment?
I was listening.
Thanks, Leans.
No worries.
What did he say?
This week.
Never you mind. It wasn't for you.
Okay.
Is it time for the Gadget of the Week yet?
It's Communist Talk Radio. Gadget of the Week. Go ahead, Graham.
This week's gadget of the week is the Lenovo ThinkPad tablet.
Oh, lucky you've got one.
Which I happen to have in my hot little hand here.
Here's one he prepared earlier.
Here's one I prepared earlier.
What's so good about it?
It's it runs the NVIDIA Tegra 2 T20 processor at 1.0 gigahertz. It runs Android version 3.1, which makes it very usable and stable and fast.
What's the silly name for that?
Honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
There you go.
Silly name. Bring on your mountain lions.
They are stupid names.
This one is the 16 gig version, but it also comes in 32 and 64 gig versions. It has Bluetooth version 3. It has a 10.1-inch high-def display with a resolution of 1280 by 800.
Oh, it's half the res of the 3.
Yeah. It's not full high-def, but it's a very, very nice picture, I can tell you. It's very, very watchable. What else can I say about it? It's a very usable and
battery life. How's good the battery
business
on it?
Tool. The battery life is variable depending on what you do with it. I haven't had mine all that long, and the battery does tend to run down. But then I have been.
Does it last you a good day? Like if you're out in the field doing stuff, or do you have to carry a charger with you?
It's been new and it's a toy. I've been playing with it, watching lots of video, playing lots of music, to have the screen brightness turned up full. So it's been dying after a few hours. But any tablet would after a few hours of that sort of thing.
I must admit, on my original iPad first generation, 2 hours will run the battery down by half if I'm listening to the stream and chatting on the chat.
Yeah, that sounds pretty comparable. I reckon if you toned it down a bit, turned the brightness down to a more realistic level and were just doing remote desktop stuff, that it would last a lot longer, or just reading your email and so on.
Very good.
There's versions available with Wi-Fi or with Wi-Fi as well as 3G. The one I've got's only Wi-Fi, connect through my phone. We've got Bluetooth version 3, 10.1-inch screen. Yeah, and sells retail for $599 Australian, which is a tiny for the equivalent for the 16 gig Wi-Fi only iPad is $539, I think.
Very good.
So it falls in between the equivalent model and the next model up for the iPad. So vaguely comparable.
Very good.
Has some advantages. Comes with an active pen for very accurate pointing and clicking, which is a big advantage over the iPad. The other advantage is it has a real live USB port. The Lenovo ThinkPad tablet. Go have a look at them.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Also has an HDMI port, by the way.
It continues.
www.endomondo.com. Are you into running or cycling or walking or skiing or kayaking or roller skating?
No.
Or mountain climbing?
No.
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 Well, that's our website of the week then, Andrew.
I like a short website.
I don't like outdoors.
You don't like real life?
No.
Endomondo lets you automatically track all your sports data and monitor your performance over time. It's similar to Runkeeper, if you've used the Runkeeper application and website. Endomondo lets you check all of this. You can log in with your existing Facebook credentials or create a new account, record workout sessions via GPS, see time you've spent exercising, distance covered, calories burned, average pace, even a map of the exercise route you've taken. Apps available for Android and iPhone and BlackBerry and HP and LG and Motorola, and the list goes on. There's an app for almost every type of phone that is out there.
Wow.
Nokia?
Which is good. Even Nokia. Oh. Even Samsung. Sony Ericsson. It's good.
Suzanne Olsen is out skiing. So far, she has tracked 24.27 kilometres in 2 hours, 17 minutes and 58 seconds.
So that's unnatural.
Really useful information, Dr. Ron.
Correct. I'm glad that you agree.
Can we move on?
www.endomondo.com.
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
This week's app, Andrew, is Viber, the mobile messaging system.
It's great.
You put me onto this during the week. It's available for iPhone and Android, and it's coming soon to the BlackBerry.
Oh, very good. I love this app.
Free international calls and text messages to other Viber users using 3G or Wi-Fi. So when I say free, I mean it's using up your data plan.
Yeah, exactly.
But Viber as a service doesn't charge you. Your Viber uses your existing contact list, so you can check out which of your phone contacts and friends is already on
and
Viber.
And that's very scary.
It is. I was a bit
As you're
scared
a testament to.
Because when you install the application, it sends a notification to everybody else
in your contacts,
in your contact list
who
has Viber.
It says, Dr. Ron's now available, and you get calls.
And I get calls, and messages suddenly start pouring in.
Yes, it sends a notification to other Viber users, as we've said. It doesn't work with Bluetooth hands-free, but your mileage may vary. I tried to get it going with my Bluetooth in the car. I couldn't get it working. There's a 50-second video on the website. For more information, have a look at www.viber.com.
Now, the difference between this and things like Skype is it uses the phone to identify the service, the phone number to identify the service that it's on, which you actually have to enter in, and then you do an SMS authentication with it. And it's the great thing about it is it runs silently in the background, doesn't use anywhere near as much battery as what Skype and those sort of things do, and it works really well. Audio quality is fantastic and great for MMSing.
If you're interested, have a look. www.viber.com.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ah, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
In an article a while back published by the Daily Mail, it was reported that the average mobile telephone carries 18 times more potentially harmful germs than the flush handle on a men's toilet. On a men's toilet.
Mm. You're pointing at Lena. Why?
Mm. I don't use men's toilets.
An analysis of handsets found almost a quarter were so dirty that they had up to 10 times an acceptable level of total viable count, or TVC, bacteria.
Ew.
While TVC is not immediately harmful, elevated levels indicate poor personal hygiene and act as a breeding ground for other bugs. The worst handset had 39 times the safe level of enterobacteria, a group of bacteria that live in the lower intestines of humans and animals and include bugs such as Salmonella. Wash your mobile phone, wash your hands.
I put mine through the washing machine, found it on the lawn underneath the clothes.
That might be a bit extreme.
Yeah, worked well though.
That's our hot spot, Andrew.
Thanks, Dr. Ron, and you're leaving us with that in your last bit before you head off north. I'm going to cut you off for 3 weeks.
Yes, you're going to cut me off for 3 weeks. I'll be back in April sometime.
We'll miss you.
Yeah,
thank you. I'll call in.
You know when we're on the radio. You know the numbers. You can ring us in. We'll put you to air. That's it for this week. Thanks, everyone, for banging the rocks together. Don't forget, catch up to us in all the regular spots. Until next week on the station you're listening to, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099, or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws, and may not be rebroadcast without approval.